Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana Elbe. And early this morning, we'll be talking to the single brothers out there. The number to dial into the broadcast is 563-999-3443. Press 1 on your phone. That'll give me an indication that you got something to say, because we're going to deliver some information this morning. I have to apologize to you all because this show was supposed to be done last night at 7 o'clock. However, when it comes time to do the show, we got some technical difficulties again. But nevertheless, we can't let that stop us. We got to get the information out there. We'll be dealing with why a real man won't sell no dope. Okay? Don't get mad with me. We just finna drop it. What should a real man be doing with his life? How should a single man carry himself in public? What should a single man do about sex? Should a single man ever pursue a woman? What about a single man and his knowledge of self? What should a single man do about dating? What should a single man do about his health? How many women should a single man have? These are just a few of the questions that we're going to deal with here this morning. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you my position exactly the way it was delivered to me a long time ago. But before we do, I'm going to go up here and deal with these commercials. When I come back, we're going in. Y'all hold on a minute.
Once again, don't wait until it's too late. Hi, I'm Tahaka. Get out of debt now. Use what you already have at your disposal. Try living in the private for the first time in your life. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. What are you going to do when the economy collapses? What are you going to do when life in the public becomes so unbearable you don't think you can survive? There is something you can do now. Gain the benefit now of using the private banking and credit available to you. Avoid the loss of your hard-earned cash with your debt notes. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Request my free report by filling out the Contact Us form, and I will rush the report to your email box. Act now. We still have a small amount of time. TahakaDebtElimination.org.
Okay, we're back. Now, first of all, the first question is, why a real man won't sell no dope? Okay. This is how it was delivered to me. Now, the man that told me this is, in my opinion, a very, very wealthy man. He, the brother had a Mustang 5.0, had a Corvette Stingray, Harley Davidson motorcycle, a motorhome, three pickup trucks, a race car that he built, and a house that he pretty much built, and several other items. But he and I were real good friends. And he has a twin brother. And I would ask him, I say, how your brother doing? And he would always respond, that boy doing all right. And to the point, I asked him, I said, well, why you always refer to your brother as a boy? He said, because he's a boy. That's what he is. He's a boy. Now, I know your brother. I got much respect for your brother. Your brother got stove. He owned buildings. All kinds of stuff. But if he called him a boy, that's what I said, he's a boy. I said, okay, man. I'm going to leave that alone. But lo and behold, one day, it hit the newspaper. His brother done got knocked off. They moving pounds of cocaine through the city. Couldn't find out. His brother was top dog running. So I went around there. I see, I seen the paper, man. I seen your brother. Yeah. They showed it. And every bit of it in there is what they said about it. I said, all right. He said, didn't I tell you he was a boy? I said, okay, man. How you equate that? He said, let me tell you something. He said, a man ain't going to sell no dope because he don't want to hurt nobody. That's why I called him a boy. I said, okay. Okay. I said, I got you now. For those of you all who are listening to this, think about it. I ain't got to go all down in the details, but if you're a man and you're trying to sell some dope, which is poison, and somebody cross you, then you ain't got no business, you ain't got no other choice but to kill him. The object of this game is to go from the cradle to the grave without taking the life of another man. That's the object of the game. Anyway, now that we got that settled, let's go down here to number 9. How many women should a single man have? Okay. And it's just my personal opinion. I personally believe that he should have as many women as he can afford. If you can't afford it, don't do it. Run around from pillar to post, skirt to skirt, woman to woman, lying, and getting them pregnant, and walking around with your chest stuck out, talking about how many women and how many children you got from all these different women. And you ain't taking care of nothing. But then you turn around and call yourself a man. Stop lying. Okay. He can have as many as he can afford. Now, the reason I'm saying this is because I know this for a fact. I don't already seen it. We have some brothers that ain't calling no name. Filthy rich. Got one of them has 3 wives. All the wives had children. All of the children from all 3 wives, the children don't know what it's like to go out and get a job working for for another man in the company. They don't know nothing about that. They've always had their own company. All the wives had everything that they needed and wanted, all of them, and all the children. Now, this man was able to do this successfully. And the most interesting part about it, in my opinion, is there was never any argument or disagreement that I ever seen between women. Never heard of it, never seen it. Was no commotion, no chaos, nothing about where you over there with her and that, none of that. None of that didn't happen. Now, I was quite fortunate to be educated by these brothers. There were three of them. I learned from them. They taught me. But before we get down and I tell you what they taught me, we're going to go up here and we're going to look at what's going on now inside the United States of America. We're going to run this little bit of information right here. Let's see what they everybody else got to say.
I have noticed some men don't like to date women that have kids.
Is this not, is it normally men who already have children or men who don't have children?
Sometimes it's men that already have kids, mm-hmm. and which is sad because it's like you already have kids, but you don't want to date someone that has kids.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the economic times that we're in has a lot to do with that? Because I can see that a man who possibly has children with someone else, and then they come into a relationship with a woman who has children, they may not want to carry that financial load of responsibility of having to care for this child also.
Right. Economically, I don't know. That's a tough question, actually. Mm-hmm. It's very tough because, like I said, everything plays a part in everything. Economically, yes, it is hard.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Because when you look at, back then,
yeah.
it was much more prevalent for a man to be open to taking a woman with children. It was easier to do that, especially when you consider being able to afford a bigger family mm-hmm. back then.
No, it was much more likely for a person to create a bigger family for themselves than to take on a ready-made family from a person that they was not supposed to be with in the first place as far as being a stepbaby daddy. Listen, man, the thing about it is that they keep trying to shame y'all for having preferences. And I don't know where that came from. Actually, I do. It came from men starting to have standards today. And now they're trying to use the simp era, because that's what I'm assuming that she's talking about, because all around the world and in every other culture, and even back in the United States of America, it used to be shame for a woman to have children out of wedlock. I mean, I even remember when we used to shame promiscuity, or we used to shame when women was out doing things and they didn't have a husband or they were sleeping around. Now, they didn't mean that it wasn't happening, but it was more or less happening under the radar, and it wasn't as promoted like it is today. I even remember reading the Scarlet Letter in school. I don't know what grade I was in or whatever like that, but we had to read the Scarlet Letter. That was one of the books that was required or that we was able to read in school. Now, if they try to put something like the Scarlet Letter in school, you're likely to get a protest from parents, from these modern parents that was raised in a single-parent household by women that embrace feminism. And it's unfortunate, but they're trying to shame you for having standards. And I'm telling you, don't back down. Don't sit there and think that it's something wrong with you because for whatever reason, whether you are a person that already has children or if you don't have children, it's nothing wrong with you deciding that, hey, this is not what I want to do. I don't want to take on somebody else's child. And vice versa for women. If a woman says, yo, listen, I'm not really interested in taking on a ready-made family. I'm okay with not having kids, or I'm okay with not talking to a guy that don't have kids if I don't have kids. I'm cool with that also, because I just think that that's just being responsible. You only get one opportunity and one life to live, and so it's your responsibility to make sure you do the best with it. Now, the thing that we do shame is people when they decide that they want to have children out of wedlock, or they just want to randomly take their baby daddy, or they wasn't thinking, or they did it out of lust or whatever, and then they decide, oh, okay, well, listen, I'm going to open up my legs, and you're going to let him bust in you, and you're going to decide to keep the kid, and you're going to make him pay child support, and he still want to play a role in his child's life, but then he need a second father or a second baby daddy, or all of a sudden your standards change when your value drop. How do you raise your standards when your value drop? It's supposed to be the opposite, but in no other thing in the world, whether we are in corporate America or whether we grow in or whatever, do you become less valuable, but then you have higher standards and requirements. That's like a poor person saying that, oh, man, I only drive a new car. When, on average, a person that is getting money usually has a car that's not as new, but it's paid off and it's generating a lot of revenue for them because they don't have to spend a lot of money on things that you would have to spend on money in order to impress people that don't care nothing about you. And it's crazy. But the guy made a really good point that I've never actually heard anybody make online. He said, what if that guy that does have kids, because she was trying to act like it's selfish. She was trying to act like, how dare them, you know, not accept us for the way that we are. Like, we don't have options. But she was trying to make sure that she was shaming him. And then the guy made an interesting point. He said, what if he realizes that it costs more to raise a kid than ever, especially considering inflation, and $100,000 ain't $100,000 no more, or $50,000, because let's be clear, on average, most people are not making $100,000. And what if he decided that he didn't want to take on that financial burden? And she didn't have an answer for that. She didn't have an answer for it. And then the other girl was talking about, yeah, back in the day, they would have been more willingly ready to take on. That's what's wrong with y'all, is that y'all think that that's the truth, and that only came from these boomers and these Generation Xers that simped out, gave us feminism, and ruined the community because they didn't have any standards. Man, y'all think that. That's why y'all feel comfortable going out there and sleeping with anybody and everybody and having a whole phase, because this whole phase is crazy that you can go out here, trick off, and then say, okay, you know what, I'm ready to settle down. Who's the best available option? And why don't I have the top 1% man? And why isn't he paying 100% of the responsibility and the resources? And y'all think like that, and you think that makes sense. And then you think that we supposed to look at you and say, ah, look at Little Future right there that's named after a look at Little Future right there that's named after a rap persona and not even a junior from the person that had him and is not responsible in his life. Let's all have the Sierra's prayer. And listen, I think that step baby daddies are a pillar of the community. I think that they are a gift and a curse. The gift part is they're superheroes in that they're doing something that I would never do or advocate for somebody else to do. And if you're willing to throw yourself under the bus in order to make sure that you save the community and save people from their own bad decisions and fix something that wasn't supposed to be here in the first place based off of the bad options of somebody else, then God bless you, and I think you need your own holiday. And they curse at the same time because they validate in bad behavior. And I think that it takes some strong decisions and a level of shaming and responsibility and forcing people to make a better decision and to raise their kids better and get back with their baby father, which I think is also enabling bad behavior, which is one of the reasons why it's also a curse. And so when you think about the yin and the yang, it kind of fosters more of this feminist behavior and mindset versus, and also in including the fact that it does do more to save communities. A lot of y'all needed fathers, and instead of holding your mama accountable for not, or for getting back with their baby daddy, or you was weaponized against your father, but then you celebrate your mother, and we spend more time celebrating mothers on Mother's Day, and fathers get socks, and Father's Day is an afterthought, is wild to me. It's absolutely wild to me. But I'm curious as to what you guys think. Why do you think that women like this have this narrative, believe this, and have this mindset? Do you think that it's as a result of what men did yesterday, versus what they're doing today? Or do you think that men are just starting to open up their minds to their preferences and ideas, and they starting to get the microphones and communicate with each other to educate each ourselves on why we should do things differently? I can't wait to read the comments. Make sure y'all tap into After Hours tonight, because I didn't do After Hours on Thursday because I had a whole lot of stuff going on with my software, and I got to rebuild some stuff.
All right, we're back. The brother has some interesting information to say. We got a whole lot of brothers out there. They are trying to make the transformation from boy to man. And a lot of them are having a lot of difficulty, and they're really doing the best they can, but they just don't have the proper guidance that I can see. And the reason why I'm saying this is because I was fortunate enough to be taken up under the wings of three different men. All these men were wealthy men. And they told me pretty much the same thing. Now, the first thing they told me, they said, well, first of all, you're young, you're strapping, you're strong, you look good, you're well-groomed and all this right here, but you got to get your mind right. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, first of all, the first thing that you're supposed to do is get yourself together. Get your head right. Knowledge of self. That's the first thing you got to get right. That's where your power is going to come from, out your mind. The next thing you have to do is accumulate what it's going to take for you to take care of yourself. If you know you're going to need money, all right, get your money. And after you get and build your castle or buy your castle, using the knowledge that you got, which is your power. Now to that, you can afford to engage with a woman and children, but you can't get that mixed up. You got to start with you. First, you get the power. That knowledge yourself. Then you get the money, whereby you can build a castle, you can get your horses and your chariots, you can do all that. All this right here is what you are supposed to be doing. One of the questions is, how should a single man carry himself in public? That's one of the questions. The next question is, what should a real man be doing with his life? Both of these two coincide with each other. First you get the power, then you get the money, and after that, then you get the girl. Because you can take responsibility for it. Now, you don't get no woman, and you cannot afford her. They're different from you. See, me and you, we go out and get us a pair of pants, some socks, some shoes, and a shirt. We good to go. Not her. She got to get her hair done. She got to get her nails done. She got to get some panties. She got to get a slip. She got to get a bra. She got to get all of this right here. And so once you deal with her, you got to be ready. But you can't be ready until you deal with you first. First, you get the power. As a result of having the power, then you get the money. And after that, you got the girl. Okay, now, they came out with these three steps in a movie called Scarface. But I was accused of stealing this information from the movie. I said, what are you talking about? I was taught this before the movie ever came out, years and years before it came out. I didn't, it took me a hard time in life to finally realize how to get it right after they done told me. Because, you know, sometimes people tell you things, you hear what they say, but you don't listen to the point that you're willing to do what they say and do. And you have to remember, well done beats well said every time. So it took me a while. But finally, I was able to remember what they had told me. I said, well, okay, I'm going to try this. I'm going to go ahead and do this. And as a result of doing it, I'm now officially have made the transformation. And I feel like I'm qualified to go over this broadcast with you, brother. So we might have some brothers out there that's under the impression that I'm not going to get the power, but I'm going to go get the girl, and me and her going to get together to buy the house. Nope, we didn't say that. I'm going to go get the girl, and she's going to give me the money so I can go get the power. No, I didn't say that. All right. We're going to roll on. We're going to take another little quick break, and y'all hold on a minute. Be right back.
All right, everybody. Don't forget, the greatest focal point in your life is when preparedness and opportunity meet. Hello, I'm Tahaka Amana L. Bay. I want to get a shout out to all the brothers and sisters across the country that got our secure party and credit information. It was now officially operating in the private. Keep in mind, you can access the direct treasury account, private banking. Knowing the difference between public and private and being able to function correctly, do that OID. Learn about your 1099s. You can do a whole lot of stuff once you have the knowledge to do so. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out the contact us form. Send it to me and I'll send you my free report. TahakaDebtElimination.org.
Okay, we're back. Now, let's deal with, because I'm going to deal with this thing about young men being raised by single parents, because we got a lot of this going on. And then, of course, we all know in this society, the so-called black man, which is no such person, has been under attack for years and years and years. Because of his identity and his prowess and all of these things and the fear of certain people. We done dealt with a lot of this information in the past, but I want to deal with the brothers who are being raised by single parents, okay? And then when we come back, then we'll go down into some more of this information about talking to the single brother.
So there's a lot of single mothers that always be asking about why some of these brothers are so turned up on some of the sisters, even though they was raised with a single mother and didn't have a father. Well, I want you, let's review this clip of what this brother say, because people really don't understand. They don't even want to talk about how bad some of these mothers are.
Somebody tagged me in a post, and the post said, how do black men grow up with single mothers and don't have respect for black women? Let me tell y'all a story. I was talking to a woman some years back, and I gotta say talking, I can't even say dating, because it was really just something casual. But she had kids. One of her sons was like 17, 18 years old. I get a text message at 2 o'clock in the morning talking about come through. I think the house is empty, so I show up for Bible study. Long story short, praise and worship starts getting...
Okay, so he said, so he thought that she, the kids was gone, they were doing their own thing, whatever, right? But that woman knew the whole time when she called that man over, her sons was there. Okay, she knew this.
Extremely loud, and the headboard starts hitting the wall, and she says, oh, we got to be quiet. My son's in the other room. Whole time, I've been banging on this man's wall. I ain't even know it. I ain't signed up for that. Low-key, I felt bad for Buddy. The next morning comes, I hear him washing dishes, walking around the house, talking to his homeboy about playing Call of Duty and all that. It's time for me to go, and I say, hey, I don't think it's best that your son sees me. She says, oh, he'll be all right. I'd even taken into account how any of that may affect him. And it concerned me because...
And it does affect him. seeing man after man after man coming in and out the house that's not their father, hell yeah, that has an effect on a boy and a girl too. It definitely has an effect.
How many men has he seen come in and out of his house like that? How can he respect another woman when a random man cares more about his well-being than his own mom? A lot of times y'all ask that mother respect question assuming that the mother was respectable.
You know, a lot of times when you have a lot of brothers that's so turned up on the sisters, I'm telling you as a man, a lot of it comes from their mother. It don't come from the women they were dating. It comes from their mother. The only thing that the women that they date that's in the community can do is just maybe do or say something that triggers them from their childhood that's something about their mother. Now, some women may say, well, some of these men don't even want to fool with black women, but we look like their mama. Exactly. Exactly. That some of their mamas have done them so bad that some of them have just turned away even from black women. Some of them. Because of their mama. I'm telling you, a lot of it is with their freaking mama. Listen, in the black community, oh, mamas are so great. Mama do this. Mama strong. Mama work, man. They got mamas out here that who are whores. They got mamas out here who just drop their kids off at grandma's house just so she can always go out to the club somewhere. So she can go hang out. Go lay around with her new little boyfriend. She can go drop him off. You think that child don't pay attention to that? Every time you look up, you're trying to get rid of him? That boy see that? That boy see that man coming out of the house 2, 3 o'clock in the morning? You think children, oh, they sleep. Them children be up. They be up 3 o'clock in the morning. And they be hearing everything that's going on in that room. And they see them men coming in and out of the house. And as that child grow up, he has no respect for you. And in turn, he don't have a lot of respect for black women. Because it goes all the way back to their mama. Now, of course, I'm not saying that you should walk around not having therapy. Because a lot of these brothers do need therapy. They really do. And it's okay to go get therapy about what happened in your childhood and how it affected you because, you know, black men are always trying to be told our feelings don't matter and stop being weak and oh, what you're being emotional for, you're acting like a girl. And, you know, it just forms of abuse that happens to black men a lot of times. This whole society has taught everyone to, you know, downcast, downtrodden, and just put down black men. This whole American society has done that. It's on autopilot when it comes to us as black men. And the only thing that we can do as black men is take our power back by getting into therapy if we have some issues like this and then moving forward. That's why a lot of them brothers like the Passport Bro movement so much is because it gives them a freedom of choice. It actually gets them to get away from everything. Everybody, this whole American society has taught them to be anti-black. Even in our own community, we have anti-blackness. So a lot of times the brothers that don't know what's going on or feel worse and feel bad about what just happened, more so on these females. And that's why some of these brothers will be so turned up like that, and some of them want to even have a conversation about black men. And of course, that's not an excuse. Listen, every time a black man has something to say how he feel, it's never an excuse. It's never a reason. It's never. Because, see, it's nothing black men can say good enough. Nothing black men can say good enough to suffice some of them. So that's why I tell brothers, don't worry about what they say. Just do you, whatever you think that may be. Because you need to get some healing and you need to get some peace from somewhere of what happened in your childhood. But let me know what y'all think about what this brother talking about and have some of you brothers been put in a situation like that, that you went to a house, female house, you didn't know her kids were there and the son saw you or something like that. Let us know.
All right, we back. Okay. Get them out for then. Okay. And keep in mind that we're going to convert this video, this show, into a video and put it up there on YouTube. And don't forget to subscribe to my channel. If you have a comment about anything that you're hearing here, go ahead and let me know. You can do a thumbs up, thumbs down, or whatever you want. If you don't agree with it, it's okay. The only thing that I can do is do what I was taught to do by the men who told me how to do it, how to make transformation, how to go from boy to man, what you supposed to do, what do you do? And we got a lot of young men out there that don't know this. That wasn't easy because when we was children, we had the brother down the street. They got out of Vietnam and big strong brothers. They didn't have nowhere to go. Wasn't nobody give them a job and all this right here. So they had to do something. So they took responsibility for me and my brothers. And exercising, we were pumping iron and lifting weights and playing football and basketball and we were doing all kind of men stuff. But a lot of these young men today, they don't have that. And nobody is stepping up to the plate to tell them anything. But nevertheless, we're having this broadcast here tonight. And I'm going to take a little quick break. And I'll be right back. Yeah, hold on a minute. Taught me, he said, let me tell you something. Women are the hunters. You are the hunted. Do you understand? I said, no. But she's pretty. He said, I'm going to say this again. Women are the hunters. You are the hunted. Now, we done already told you. First, you get the power. Then you get the money. And then, okay, he get a girl. Your job is to be busy learning everything that you could possibly learn so that you could take care of yourself. Because if you ain't got nothing, you can't get nobody nothing. Okay, that's real easy. All right. You take care of you. You put a roof over your head. And I don't care if it ain't nothing but a cardboard box. That's your box. Then you go get your horses and chariots. You go get your bank. You go get your companies. You go get everything that you supposed to do for you, by you, for you, to benefit you. And now we're ready to go on to something else. Let me tell you something. When I was in high school, I was dating a girl. But one night, it was about 9 o'clock at night, I get a phone call. The woman on the other end said, you need to come over here and get this woman out of in front of my house, threatening to beat my daughter. And she said that you her man, and y'all in love, and this, that, and the third. I said, what? Who is this woman? She told me the woman's name. I said, I don't know her. I don't know her. Well, undoubtedly you do, because she's out here. She's saying that you her man, and you and her go together, and y'all in love. And I said, what? Now, keep in mind, this was on the weekend, but when it's time for us to go back to school, and keep in mind, I'm just in the ninth grade. I had to go get somebody to point the girl out to me. And come to find out, this girl here, I didn't even know her. But she had to concoct it. Some stuff in her mind about I'm her man, we go together, and you around here to a girl who everybody in the school know I'm dating, and you threatening to whoop her about me, and I don't even know you. Isn't that amazing? That is some amazing stuff to me. I seen the girl. She's very, very shapely. You know, she wasn't no ugly woman. She, you know, but I don't know you. And you around there in front of my girlfriend house threatening, want her to come outside so y'all can fight because you done lied and told her that I'm your man and we in love. And I said, what in my head? What is this? Well, it goes all the way back to what the men had already told us. First of all, you are the hunter. She's the hunter. You're supposed to be taking care of what you got to do. And don't worry about that. Huh? Just take care of you, because you there will be no shortage in your life of women. If you busy taking care of your responsibility for yourself and preparing yourself to do what you got to do as a man. Now, I'm going to take a look at some statistics, and when we come back, then we'll go back in. Oh, y'all okay?
Last week, I delved here into recent data from the CDC suggesting major problems with regard to the mental health of our adolescents, surges in depression and suicidal ideation, especially true for our girls. This week, I found cause to worry about young men. This headline from The Hill, it caught my eye. Most young men are single. Most young women are not. The story reported that as of 2022, Pew Research Center found 30% of U.S. adults are neither married, living with a partner, nor engaged in a committed relationship. Nearly half of all young adults are single. Now, look at these numbers. 34% of women, twice as many, a whopping 63% of men. What explains that? I pulled the Pew study and I read with interest. Turns out since 2019, the share of single men who say they're looking for dates or a relationship has declined from 61% to 50%. In 2018, 28% of men ages 18 to 30 reported they'd had no sex in the past year, compared with 18% of women of that age. The Hill report said men in their 20s are more likely than women in their 20s to be romantically uninvolved, sexually dormant, friendless, and lonely. They stand at the vanguard of an epidemic of declining marriage, sexuality, and relationships that afflicts all of young America. among the causes, among the factors, a reliance on social media and online porn. But also, more young women are hooking up with each other or dating and marrying slightly older men, and heterosexual women are getting more choosy. Other troubling statistics about men come from a 2021 study from the Survey Center for American Life. They found the share of men who have six or more close friends, which in 1990 was 55%, by 2021 had shrunk by half. Meanwhile, those with literally zero close friends, which stood at 3% in 1990, has zoomed to 15%. An expert quoted by The Hill said this disconnect can have catastrophic consequences for young men. Quote, in the worst case scenario, the young American man's social disconnect can have tragic consequences. Young men commit suicide at four times the rate of young women. Younger women are largely responsible for rising rates of mass shootings, a trend that some researchers link to their growing social isolation. Well, those words reminded me of a conversation that I had over a year ago right here on CNN with NYU professor Scott Galloway.
But the issue is, when you have a group of men, the lower half of attractiveness of men, and online dating, which has doubled, now it's about half of relationships, and the top 20% of men in terms of attractiveness get about 60% of the interest, you end up with a group of men that are more prone to conspiracy theory, more prone to misogynistic content, more prone to not believe in climate change. So this is the American story. If it's written with a pen whose ink is failing young men, does not end well. This is an existential crisis, failing young men.
As always, Professor Galloway was prescient. Back with me now is Scott Galloway. He's a professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business. He's a serial entrepreneur. He's the host of the Professor G podcast and author of multiple best-selling books, most recently, Adrift, America in 100 Charts. Scott, thanks for returning. Hasn't the advantage always been to those with the looks and or the money? What's changed?
First off, Michael, I just want to say thank you for raising this issue a year ago when a lot of media companies were afraid to talk about this for fear of it being pro-men with somehow being anti-women. Look, this is returning to the natural order of things. For the majority of history, a small percentage of men have had the majority of the mating opportunities. But in America, we decided to make a huge investment in what would probably be the greatest innovation in history, and that is in the middle class. From 1945 to 1947, 7 million.
Okay, we're back. Now, let's go back to what I done told you. Women are the hunters. You are the hunted. Don't forget that. Should you pursue a woman, the answer is no. No. Don't do that. Your job is to take care of you, get your power, get your money, get your bank, get your horses, your chariot, get your army, get your weapons, get everything that you are supposed to be doing as a man. That's what you are supposed to be doing. You don't have to worry about her. She comes. Because there's one thing you will discover about a woman. A woman, when she sees what she wants, she's going to get it. You can't stop her. When she sees what she wants, you can't stop her. You're going to get what she wants regardless. That's why I've been looking at a lot of men. I'm in love with a girl, and you know we get married and all this. Okay, all that's fantastic, man. Well, congratulations. You know, you ready for all that now? Oh yeah, man. I'm ready, man. You show you ready. Yeah, man. I'm ready. Okay. 4 years later, they don't fill out. He goes. And he got an apartment, and her children in the apartment, but they finna get ready to get a divorce, and he's trying to hold on, and this, that, and the third. But anyway, they come to a little settlement. Say, well, Christmas, when Christmas come, you come around here, and you can bring your children their toys and stuff, and now you can spend the day around here. We spend the day together. Okay. However, when he go to work, because we already got this plan, the boss man on the job told him, said, well, look here, fellas, we usually work on Christmas Eve, but this time we're closing up shop, and y'all going on home, and you ain't got to worry about working on Christmas Eve. Y'all going on to the house and spending Christmas Eve and Christmas Day with your family. So the brother goes home, stick the key in the door. When he get in the house on Christmas Eve, because he's supposed to be there on Christmas Day. When he get there Christmas Eve, she in the bed sexing another man. He walked right in there and looked dead at him. He eased out the house when he got a .38 out the car and came back in there and shot both of them. Killed her instant. Shot him, he fell up on the side of the bed. He thought he had killed him. Called Popo to come around there. And he's sitting in the living room with the pistol on the table. He got the pistol. Said, we're going to put you in handcuffs. And we're going back in and look at the crime scene. When they go back there, they say she dead. And but the brother, he on the side of the bed playing dead. They get him up and bring him out. And when he see this brother ain't dead, it took about five police officers to try to hold this joker down in handcuffs. He's trying to get a hold of this man. Okay? You want to avoid all of that. Get yourself together. Get your power, your money, your bank, and get everything that you got to get together for you. And remember, if you ain't got nothing, you can't get nobody nothing. So therefore, you ain't got no choice but to start with you. Get yourself together. And I see grown men, I can't call them men because I was taught better. As soon as they do it, man, that's a fine. Oh, man, she put it. Okay. all right. What you doing about you? Now, I'm not saying to anybody, don't look at a woman and say, well, she's not cute. She, you know, I ain't saying that. The only thing I'm telling you is get you together first. You ain't got to worry about her. Because she see you when you ain't even looking. Okay? Y'all hold on a minute. And we'll be right back. Y'all hold on.
I know I got a good woman waiting at home for me. Fellas, if you know what I'm talking about, I'm gonna text my baby and let her know that I'm on my way. Hey, but I'm on my way. Ain't gonna take long, no, no, no. Ooh, just one more day. Okay. You hold yourself together and remember I'm your only fella. And when we make love tonight, we won't be dreaming. Girl, we'll be together. Oh yes, we're gonna make love all night.
and down my spine. I know you got what it takes for me, baby. Oh, girl, I'm gonna love you to the end of time. We're gonna make love all night till the morning light. We can't do no wrong, baby. I'm home tonight. This old man is home. Oh, girl, your man is home tonight. Yes, your man is home. Ooh, baby, your man is home tonight. You're so satisfying in everything that you do. Tonight when we make love, baby, girl, I ain't gonna never, never turn you. Your love and touch, so satisfying. You know I'm glad that I made you mine. Oh, baby. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, baby. Ooh, your man is home. Oh, baby. Your man is home tonight. Big man is home tonight. See everything you do, girl, I like it. Every time you touch my body, baby, I'm so glad to be near you. You know your man is home, baby. I'm gonna give you what you want. Let me, baby. You got me rocking and reeling. Woo! Oh, girl, what a feeling. Do you feel it, baby? You're not dreaming, baby. I'm not dreaming, baby. Oh, we're together right now, baby. I want you to know, baby, your man is home. Your big daddy is home. Make me wanna say, oh, your man is home tonight.
All right, we back. Okay, let's get down into some of this stuff right here that I've already been through. But what I would like to know is, how would you have handled the situation? Okay. I'm sitting outside, just relaxing, just chilling, you know. I've done all my work, and I cut the yard, and I got the trees trimmed, and the eggs up, and done all that something to sit out here in the cool of the day and just relax. All of a sudden, I see this woman coming up the road. Come to find out, she was a friend of mine's sister. I remember her from back in the day. She got married and she had children and all of that. I didn't know would that ever become of her, but I do remember she was his older sister. I remember that. And she said, "I ain't seen you in ages." I said, "I ain't seen you in a long time either." She said, "You mind if I sit out here with you?" I said, "Sure. Hold on. Let me get you a chair. You can come on out here and sit down, and we can talk and, you know, shoot a flat and stuff. You know, just an old friend of mine." I never, even back in the day, I never considered her nothing other than you my friend's sister. That's it. I ain't seen nothing past nothing else. Other than that. But she told me, she said, "You know I got married." I said, "Yeah, your brother told me you got married. But you know what?" I said, "What?" She said, "Me and him didn't get along." I said, "You didn't?" "No. I had to end up. I shot him." I said, "You did?" Yeah, and I stabbed him. And I went out there and I bust out all the windows in his car and I flattened all of his tires on his car. I said, you did? I said, was that bad? He said, yeah. He said, but you know what? I said, what? I always had a crush on you. I said, wait a minute. Hold on. She jumped up and went in the house where my mama was and started crying and telling my mama that she was in love with me. She had always been in love with me, and I have never paid her any attention and all this right here. And I'm like, woo. But anyway, it still goes back to the same thing that I already told you. They the hunters. You the hunters. Okay, let's roll on. I don't even forget this. She run out the house and run around the corner. And here come my brother around the corner. See, you were mad. He come here crying, man, what you did? I said, man, I ain't did nothing. I said, we sitting out here talking. And she told me she was married. She told me she shot her husband. He said, yeah, she sure did. And she told me she stabbed him. Yes, she did that too. And flattened all four his tires and bust out his windows in the car. Sure did. And then she turned around and told me she was in love with me. He said, well, oh, shit. He said, all right, okay, bro. I'm going to go. He said, man, I'm going to go right here straight. I said, please, man. Please help me out. He said, man, I don't believe this. I said, believe it. Believe it. I'm telling you the truth. I ain't never telling you so you don't lie. Never. But anyway, let's take a look at some more of this stuff over here and see what else we got. This time, let's deal with, wait a minute, what I want to deal with is out here, we got people from other countries. What do they think about the brothers? And how they feel about it? Okay, let's take a look at this.
It is Wild Wednesday, and I'm going to get wild and offensive with my videos because I think it's time somebody digs deep into our culture and into our people to figure out what is going on upstairs with our women. Divorce is on the rise more than ever among Middle Easterners, whether they live in the Middle East or abroad. And just like we saw among westernized countries like America, when the women became independent is when the family structures collapsed. They collapsed to the point where now women are waking up and saying, you know what? I want a home again. I want my kids to have a healthy home. Well, the Middle Easterns are not there. We are at the point where we are collapsing because not only are women independent asking for a divorce, but we also have culture shock. A lot of our women are extremely spoiled. Yes, I said it. A lot of our women are extremely spoiled and the men cannot keep up. What is happening with our women? We went from a point where Arab men used to tell each other, marry her young, mishanet rabbi ala idak, so you can raise her your way, which is not right either. Come to find out, ilmara mabtet rabba, you cannot raise a woman because we get to a point where we know what we want. And did you guys know that 70% of divorces are initiated by women? And of those women, 90% of them are college educated. Are they sick of the abuse and they want out because they know they can support themselves? Or do they no longer want to make the sacrifice for their marriage? Let's talk about it.
You know, all these non-black women, they really want a black man. They don't want to deal with their own race of men. Because the people who are racist, you know, like the Indian, the Arab, the Latino, who tell their daughters not to date black guys or their sons not to date black girls, they have the most problems in their relationships. That's right. That's the reason why they have to be racist to try and keep their daughters or their sons away from dating black people because that's who they truly desires and wants to be with. If not, why would you have to teach them to be like that? If you didn't think they would sleep with a black guy, why do you have to teach them or train them to be racist? You're doing that out of fear. So that's what you must understand, that these racist groups, they really want to date a black guy or a black female.
You know what I hear a lot of Middle Eastern guys saying these days? They're like, I don't want to marry an Arabic girl because I have to pay for the wedding, and then she wants a wedding planner. She's going to spend hours explaining to the wedding planner what she wants when she can just call the florist and send her a picture off of Pinterest and it's done. Then she wants me to buy the house that she wants me to hire an interior decorator for when she's a professional shopper and she's in the same stores that the interior decorator is going to be at anyways. And then, fast forward, she's going to divorce me and take half of everything anyways. I might as well marry a white girl that's going to pay for everything with me. That way, when she divorces me, it's her cut anyways. She earned it. She paid for it. Why do I need an Arabic girl? And on top of the Arabic girl's going to bring me, her mother and her sisters are going to be at my house all day, but then my parents are never going to be in my house because it's not comfortable for her. Your mom is too opinionated, but her mom's not opinionated. Makes sense, right?
You see, now, another thing you must understand about dating Arabs is that they are used to being spoiled, or they like being spoiled. Why you think their men have to make sure they have money? They have to open up stores in black hoods and black communities. Because if they don't have the money, they're not sticking around. You know, and that's why other groups of people, they focus so much on not supporting black businesses. And they don't want black men to have money. They like to see you in poverty. Because like that, you won't be able to take their woman. You understand? That's why they don't support black businesses. But Arabs, they like guys with money. They want to be spoiled, just like Asian, white. You know these other groups? If you a black guy, long as you have a good job or you're making good money, you can't sleep with them.
I highly recommend marrying black men. A lot of Arab and brown women are reaching out and they're trying to find black men. And I say black men are kind. They're very secure in their masculinity. They're also gentle. They're also not like... I see this a lot in the Arab community because I grew up in it. Men get very shy that their women are out there or their woman work or their woman does something. And black men are very chill and secure about it. Like, she's on her dean. She's respecting herself. I'm not going to feel shy about this. And that's a huge cultural difference that I definitely appreciate from marrying a black man. So do yourself a favor, ladies. Find yourself a black man.
All right, we back, everybody. Now, let's go down the line and see what else that we can deal with here. And keep in mind, I'm just trying to help out the single brothers out there. I'm trying to get you to look at this thing from every conceivable angle so that you won't just be single and don't know what to do. And I feel like if you know what's going on, then you can do something about it. Well, let's take a look at who you are and what you had the ability to do in the first place. Now, this next bit of information I'm going to run, keep in mind, we're talking about you. We are talking about you. And what you done on this earth in the United States of America, okay? Because in my opinion, if you had the ability to do this, then I don't think there's nothing that you can't do. In my opinion, this is just my personal opinion. Hold on a minute, let's roll.
According to research by the Marketer's Guide to African American Millennials, black millennials are currently 57% more likely to drive a Cadillac than those of other races. Cadillac's premium sports utility vehicle, the Escalade, continues to be a favorite of many in the black community. Outkast arrived in the Super Bowl 53 in 2019 halftime act in a vintage Cadillac convertible. And I think we all remember Snoop Dogg's Cadillac, the Snoop DeVille. And in the 2006 single, Throw Some D's, Rich Boy boasted, just bought a Cadillac. In the 1970s and the 1980s, it is believed to be only a strange stereotype that black people love Cadillacs. But it turns out that black people didn't develop a fondness for Cadillac by mistake. Cadillac made its debut as General Motors' premier luxury vehicle in 1903. It was a huge hit and became well known for its superb engineering. But GM had an unwritten rule to avoid selling to black people for many years in the early 20th century. These discriminatory practices are implemented by Cadillac and other luxury automobile makers in an effort to capture the prestigious auto market. Selling to black people would diminish that status in their distorted minds and the minds of the majority of society. The Great Depression struck, and as you would have imagined, Cadillac was among the first businesses to experience a decline in sales. GM eventually permitted black folks inside their showrooms when they were about to permanently discontinue Cadillac. This is the story of how black people saved Cadillac. So sit back, relax, let's get into it. Cadillac arrived on the American scene around the start of the 20th century. There were many more auto manufacturers at the time. There were 57 new car companies founded and 27 failed in 1903 alone. Numerous models that were introduced over the years are now only a distant memory. Hudson and Studebaker spring to mind. However, the 1903 debuting Cadillac is still in production today. However, it was once in danger of going under, but was saved at the last minute. The Cadillac was the most costly and top-of-the-line offering from General Motors. The Great Depression of the 1930s led the automobile market to decline significantly as a whole, and the luxury class of cars to all but disappear. Of the 1.7 million automobiles that General Motors produced in 1928, 41,000 of them were Cadillacs. GM's overall car manufacturing had fallen to under 800,000 by 1933. Only 6,700 Cadillacs were sold in that year, a drop of 84%. Cadillac was losing so much money that it was clear management would shut down operations. To do this, the GM Executive Committee was called to a meeting. An uninvited guest, Nicholas Drastet, knocked on the door during the meeting and requested to be heard for only 10 minutes. A talented technician, Drastet was in command of all of GM's service departments countrywide. Drastet claimed to have a strategy to turn Cadillac profitable within the next 18 months. He had seen a sizable number of African Americans in the service departments at Cadillac shops getting service done to their cars while he was touring service departments around the nation. They belonged to a small African American elite that included ministers, boxers, entertainers, attorneys, and physicians. GM had a policy at the time that prohibited its dealerships from selling Cadillacs to black people. GM believed it would harm the reputation of their luxury brand. Black people didn't often have access to status symbols. They were not allowed to reside in high-end neighborhoods or frequent upscale nightclubs. Cadillac's policy of not selling, however, was simple to get around. They simply paid white guys to front for them. Drastet discovered that black people were paying white men $300 to buy their cars. The executive committee was advised to pursue this market by Drastet. Why should a group of white men receive several hundred dollars apiece when General Motors could benefit from the profit? The board accepted his argument, and in 1934 saw a 70% surge in Cadillac sales. Drastet was appointed the head of Cadillac Division on June 10, 1934. His efforts were so fruitful that the Cadillac Division quickly achieved break-even status by 1940. Sales had increased by the factor of 10 thanks to the black dollar. This not only altered the market, but also the customer. Respect was given to black consumers as a real economic force multiplier that at the very least could boost the economy and maybe save a whole business and a large number of jobs. In their own showrooms, dealers still had the last say. In a 1995 Washington Post column written by renowned automotive journalist Warren Brown, related a story that illustrated how late Cadillac dealerships used discriminatory practices. Brown's mother was denied entry to a Cadillac showroom in 1965. The fact that she ultimately purchased a 1965 Coupe de Ville from a white guy in a nearby city demonstrates that dealerships continue to employ racist practices more than 30 years after Drystat's historical meeting. Drystat's campaign to remove discriminatory sales policies in the 1930s does not appear to have affected Cadillac's marketing. The division did little, if anything, to actively seek out black clients while wanting dealerships to stop turning them away. Cadillac's advertisements during the 1970s showed a world of glitz and elegance that was only made up of white people. The company wouldn't consciously increase the diversity of its marketing until the 1990s. Perhaps more than any other car, the Cadillac has come to represent prosperity, but not just any success, but the American dream, a kind of success that is within everyone's reach. Successful black people in the South would drive a caddy to church on Sunday mornings. A good word to describe this is flossing. Cadillacs were, and unquestionably still are, the automobile to get decked out in candy paint, flip trunks, and classic Vogues in order to go to the park and compare rides with your friends on Sunday evenings, especially for younger black people in a location like Houston, Texas. The majority of Cadillac's study on black people indicates that we do not wish to be singled out or treated differently. It merely demonstrates that we want inclusion and treatment as real Americans. Cadillac uses imagery of black professionals and families in their commercials, similar to how white people are frequently portrayed. The goal is to inspire a warm and fuzzy feeling by appealing to certain aspects of black culture, including attire, language, and body language. It's clear that Nicholas Drystat's push for marketing to black customers prevented Cadillac from collapsing. Since then, the company has received acclaim for being upfront about its involvement in unfair sales tactics and for making an attempt to adopt a socially responsible attitude. Clearly, the spending power of African Americans has kept many businesses afloat. We can only hope that one day we will utilize that purchasing power to save the big companies that we control.
Hey, you watched to the very end. We appreciate it, guys. Thanks for watching another episode of Aggressive Intelligence. See you in the next one.
All right. How about that? Now, here go my question. If you did that back in the day, how could you be having a problem with this woman? Why don't you use the same ingenuity and your same power that you did that with to deal with yourself? Then you got to worry about the system. You got to worry about it. If you busy doing what you're supposed to do as a man, you ain't got to worry about nothing. If you going to be righteous, you be righteous with you. That's where it start at. Start with you. Make sure that you got everything that you need to do with what you got to do. If you going to fall in love with something, why don't you fall in love with you first? Then you got some practice. then you can know how to deal with the opposite sex. You know how to do that. Okay? Now, let's go on to something else. Let's talk about the power for a minute. What's inside your head? Now, if you are a religious man, my question to you is, what is your religion? Is your religion inside of you, or is it something outside of yourself? Because prior to you growing up, you know, when you was a child, that you didn't know nothing about no religion, you know nothing about no Jesus, no God, none of that. You're ripping and running and having fun, enjoying yourself all day long until somebody come along and say, well, look, I got to protect my child and take them to the church and introduce them to Jesus. Well, hold on a minute. Hold on. Right there. Is he inside of me, and who is he? And if I believe in something, the least I should be able to do is describe by definition whatever it is that I'm claiming to believe in. If you say that you believe in something outside of yourself, the least you should be able to do is describe it. What is it that you believe in? And what we will discover is there's a whole lot of people that believe in a whole lot of things that they can't even describe. They say, well, you know, the devil, this is the old, What side of town does he live on? Where he at? So I can go over there and tell him you the one sent me over there so I can see him. Well, you know, understand it because God said, all right, who and what is God? What is that? Well, Jesus said, who is that? Now, think about it for a minute. You got all of these things that you can talk about, but you can't define it. Now, reasonably, to the point that an individual is saying, well, okay, all of this has been verified as a fact. And if it ain't, then we got a problem. Now, let's take a look at why do good men remain single? Let's take a look at some of that.
Out of 100 of my friends, 85 is single. 85 are single.
Some of the most qualified men in America are living bachelor lifestyles. They're competent, reliable, enjoyable, considerate, and spiritual, but single.
How many African-American men do you know that are somewhat successful, that I'm a single male, I don't have any kids? Not to say that if I did have children, I wouldn't be a rare commodity. I just don't at this time.
Because I wanted someone to be just like my mother, because to me, my mother's perfect. Like, I don't see a flaw in my mother.
You know, I'm so focused on character building for my future with school.
I think that women may look at a man for a particular dream they may have had. You know, or will he make six figures, or, you know, this one is 6'4".
I thought it was important to do this film because I wanted to give men a platform to share their stories about singlehood and also help women understand you know, that they need to look deeper and look beyond a man's surface when they're trying to have them commit and engage into a relationship.
Once we start to, you know, build momentum, you become kind of timid. You know, you're like, wait a minute. Because sometimes it's too good to be true, and then you find yourself going into an area that you really didn't think you'd go into.
I don't let a lot of people get in my space, because what I don't want is, when I give you my space, that I somewhat, you know, be hurt from you. And so I always got the defense mechanism. I'm always on defense.
The hurt that comes behind it makes you feel inferior, you know, to a woman, to a certain extent. And it's almost to the point of where you don't feel like yourself any longer, like you lose yourself somehow. Like, you know, the strength of what you were before is just no longer there anymore. You break down.
Men living alone have increased over the past four decades from 5.6% to 11.8%, despite the fact that men are more qualified today to be married than ever before in history.
All right, that's going to do it. We're back. All right, now, let's see now. Let's deal with another case in point. When I first moved into my home, I had a girlfriend that I would date in the morning, and then I had one I would date in the afternoon. However, there was a woman that lived around the corner from me. I pull up in the house from work, get out of my truck and go in the house to relax for the evening and chill out for a while and get ready to go to work the next day. However, she told me, she said, excuse me, can I have a word with you? I said, sure. Let me go ahead and take off these work clothes and I'll take a shower and then I'll be over there. Okay. So we done that. When I came over there, she said, come on in and have a seat. My reason for inviting you over here is because I wanted to talk to you. I said, well, okay. All right, I'm sitting here, I'm listening. First of all, I want you to know that I'm not looking for a man. I said, okay. As a matter of fact, I'm not dating anyone. And I ain't even looking for no man. I said, okay. All right, well, what is it that you want to talk to me about? Well, that was just it. I just wanted you to know that. This was the most baffling enigma that I ever heard in my life. I mean, this was rocking me because I could not figure out why. If, you know, I just moved in over here. I haven't said good morning, good evening, good afternoon to you. How you doing? Hello. Who are you? I ain't done none of that. I'm busy dating a woman in the morning and dating a different woman in the afternoon. But you done stopped me from going in my home and invite me to your house to tell me this. For what? Why? It is the most amazing thing that I've ever seen in my life. Amazing. Let's deal with this single mixer.
What's good, everybody? It's your boy, O'Shea Duke Jackson, back at it again with another episode of The Celebrity Junk. Dima, Crip Walk Music! So guys, I just got informed about last night this particular TikTok video that is going viral amongst the black internet. And it comes from a particular young lady by the name of Danny 2Q. I believe that is the sister's name. Danny D2Q. And like I said, she's a very, very attractive young lady, right? And she went to a singles mixer, all right? I don't know where this was. And only women showed up. Now, we can't play her video because it has a copyright song with Tyrese in it. But if you can look at it, the women didn't look too bad. They looked very attractive. And there was no men there at this mixer. And the reason is... for many, and we'll discuss this. Rewind, Nemo! Let's go back to 2015. A particular YouTuber was discussing this situation by the name of Obsidian Mumia Ali. You guys know him here as the Obsidian Media Network. He has the voice of the everyday brother. And he was talking about this sort of pandemic of black women going to these mixers to meet black men. And black men were just not interested in showing up. Now, you wonder, like, why would that happen? You know, think about that. Like, black men love to go to see where women at, right? Because, you know, that one saying, like, where the hoes at, nigga? Like, we love to see where the women are at, right? No disrespect, but that's just a saying in the hood. We like to go to the clubs. We want to go to outings and concerts because women are there. But the issue is that black men who have participated in these mixers, find out some things, and that is that most of the women that are at these mixers are not going to be interested in these particular black men. Who are the black men? The average black man, okay? The women at these mixers are going to have the same super, you know, like I said, super motivated, super entitled standards. They're going to be looking for guys who are 6'5", 6'4", $400,000 a year. It's equivalent to a black woman going to the church looking for that kind of God-sent man. And so what's going to happen is that a lot of black men used to go to these things, and then they would find out that, you know, very few of the men were the ones that these ladies desired, okay? So you may have like 80 guys come to the mixer, and you might have 200 women. And then you may have one guy that might leave with three phone numbers because those women were not interested. So a lot of black men started to realize that these mixers were actually a waste of time. It was much better to, you know, save your money and go to things like Tinder, Match.com, Facebook, you know, you name it, or just go talk to chicks in the streets and you'll get that. So that's one of the one reasons I learned from Obsidian. But secondarily, we just got to be honest. Black men have found other options. That's something that we don't want to talk about, but it has to be talked about. And again, this is coming from somebody from the Pan-African community. I'm a staunch, if you want to say my personal life, B1. I don't really talk about it a lot here on this channel. But if you've watched me on my Ken Ghana YouTube channel, then you would know. I can sometimes get real deep in over there. And then, like I said, me and the other brothers in the community, we try to talk about what's going on in the black world all the time. And what we've seen is that a lot of brothers have experienced different levels of treatment from other ladies. What does that mean? That means that a lot of ladies come to these mixers, most likely are educated, most likely over 35. So these are women who are having trouble finding men in their own respective professions. And so the men that they would be interested in, I've already found a community of women that they can talk to. And these men have already believe that the women that they are dealing with right now are going to treat them much better than these women at these mixers. Meaning that you have some brothers who might date in the Pan-African community. What does that mean? That means you're dealing with women that are Ghanaian American, Ethiopian American, Ethiopian immigrants that come over to America, Caribbean American, and you will find that these women are much younger. These women have some more traditional values, and these women are not going to be competing for the man with a sort of a masculine attitude. What tends to happen at these mixers, from what I've been told, a lot of these women are really professional. They may have a kid or two, and their mindset towards relationship is not that of compromise. And again, I want to talk about brother from Focus on Liberia, brother by the name of Leo over there. He says this about, in general, what do you expect from anything you do in life as a result of your participation? And I want to talk about that because it's very, very true. Women at these mixers believe that they're going to show up, some man's going to just choose them, and it's going to go from there. But what do they expect from the relationship as a result of her participation? And what we're finding out as we get deeper and deeper into this black love issue is that a lot of black women expect that things are going to be handed to them irrespective of their attitude, irrespective of what they look like or what they have in the background. And because they are them and they have went to college or they can take care of a kid by themselves, that qualifies them to have a good relationship, when that has nothing to do with her participation in the relationship with the black man. So what does she expect as a result of her participation? Many of these ladies are not trying to participate in trying to improve a man's quality of life or to be a good mate. They're looking at it only from what they can get from the situation. And so what happens when these black men who are wildly talented, who have experienced a multitude of different cultures, maybe have went to different universities and lived in different cities, they look at these mixers as a joke because they don't need to go to them. Most black men in the middle class, depending on what city they live in, don't need to go to mixers, especially brothers in the upper middle class, because they're already taken. Many black men have a lot of opportunities. The world is not what it used to be. Many black women are competing with the world. God forbid you live in New York City, you live in Atlanta, you live in cities like Philadelphia, you live in cities like Memphis, Detroit, where you have a conglomerate of different ladies there that can compete for a brother that's doing very well. You're competing against the world. So most brothers are not going to mixers because why? They can already get what they want. The women at the mixers can't get what they want, and guys just don't want to show up because it's a waste of their time. It's a waste of their time, a waste of their money. And guys will, you know, if they can see you out in the streets or something like that at the gas station, it's okay. But they're not going to do it. And really what we're seeing is a decline in the interest of black men towards black women. And it has a lot to do with the competition coming from other parts of the world. And it's just really, it's economics. You have demand and supply. And black men have a lower supply, the ones that are really talented, and the women are in a lot of supply. And if you're a guy that's in the upper 20%, 25% of America, you don't have a lot to worry about when you're talking about dealing with a mate. You just don't. And that's why these sisters are at these mixers by themselves. But guys, what do you think? It's your boy, O'Shea Duke Jackson, back at it again with another episode of The Celebrity Junk. I appreciate you for all that you do. Subscribe, hit the bell. Check out the first clip at the top. And as you know, the before remains also.
All right, here we go. Now we're back. Let me explain something to y'all. So you won't miss this point right here. One of the most dangerous things in the world for a single brother to be aligned with is another single brother that's a trick. A trick is dangerous. Now, my definition of a trick is a brother who, when he's out and about or wherever he at, he see a woman that looks good or whatever, they go trying to rap on her and talk to her. Now, he don't know that she's the hunter and he's the hunted. He don't understand that. This is what was taught to me. Anytime you find yourself alive with a trick, get rid of him. You hear what I say? Get rid of it. It's dangerous. Trick will get you killed for no other reason in the world than the fact that he's a trick. You riding down the street, you got your boy in the car, you see a woman, man, slow down, man, roll down the window, man, hey, get him out of your vehicle immediately. Get rid of him. He's dangerous. This is what was taught to me. Now, I've been in a situation with tricks. But in order to understand this, you have to deal with a little bit of psychology. Now, I'm in the East. All our life, even from childhood, we had cartoons. In the cartoons, we had Addison Jerry and Mighty Mouse and all these, but in every single case, we had the male chasing after the female. Every single case. All the cartoons, we had one called Pepe Le Pew, where this cat, Pepe Le Pew, he in love with a skunk called Fifi, and he chasing sitting her down. But during that time period, I did not look at the psychology of what was actually going on. And it had never dawned on me that the people that was promoting this information was tricks. And none of them didn't look like me. It belonged to him and not you. It is an amazing thing. It exists inside the United States. But in other parts of the world, where they definitely spending millions and millions and millions of dollars over to keep you from knowing the difference in the fact that you ain't got no business out there tricking. You ain't got time for that. What you supposed to be doing is taking care of you. You ain't gotta worry about none of that. Okay? Now let's go on to something else. Why are the brothers struggling today?
Shift the conversation. Oh. Well, let's shift the conversation here just a little bit. So you know it's over. She knows it's over. Now you are back on the dating market. And I think the reason why you and I wanted to have conversations like this was to let other black men know you're not alone. You're not, like, you're not the only ones going through these kinds of things. Now, I've been out of the game, good God, almost it'll be 8 years coming up in January. So I can't necessarily speak to the goings-on out here in the dating market because I just haven't been there. I haven't been out there in a while. I'm fortunate enough to still be in a relationship with the same woman for the last 7+ years. But what are some things that you are experiencing out in the dating market as a black man who has been divorced?
Well, let me first say this.
Okay.
When I got married, I was 28.
Oh.
So when I came back, when the marriage ended, I was 38. So my expectation of the type of woman that was out here was drastically different. At 28 years old, I didn't have to deal with, I wasn't really in circles where I dealt with a lot of single mothers. I knew there were a lot of single mothers out here, right, but I was a professional. I was in professional environments. Most of the women around my age at that point did not have children or working on. So the biggest shocker coming out at 38 mm-hmm. was what I had access to,
right,
which was nothing but baby mamas.
Right.
You know, and if you were, and I hate to use that term, that derogatory term, but Fantasia is the one, believe it or not, Fantasia is the one that actually gave black women that term because they embraced it.
Baby
when she
mama.
Came out with
oh,
that
yeah,
song,
yeah,
This Is For My All My Baby Mamas, that term didn't really exist until she came out with that song. And so that one was out here in the market. And I really wasn't really tripping over it initially because I didn't really have any real awareness. Because in black culture, you know, that's normal to see guys dealing with women with multiple kids or multiple guys. That's just a normal way of doing things. But when you're a guy on a different trajectory and you got different goals and you're in different spaces, you know, I'm a guy that, on a professional standpoint, I go to like mayor's balls and high, you know, a tuxedo, you know, fundraisers. One of my best friends is a vice president of a major bank.
Oh wow! So you're used to going to like black tie events, things.
Yeah.
Of that nature. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. And so, you can't really bring Shaniqua with her four different baby daddies, you know, that type of, let me kind of dial back.
Okay.
I took out a girl. I wish I remember her name, but she was the prototypical, you know, three baby daddy type of girl. I took her to Olive Garden.
Uh-oh.
And Donovan, she started crying at the table. And I looked at her, I was like, you know, I'm thinking, I was like, what's going on? I thought maybe she's dealing with something. And she goes, and I kid you not, she goes, I've never been to a restaurant this fancy.
Oh, my God. This woman cried at the Olive Garden. And now here's the thing. Shout out to Olive Garden. I love Olive Garden. I'm not going to act like I'm above going.
No,
to
I love.
Dude, unlimited. Look, you and I, man, we're both big boys, right? Like,
we
can appreciate the unlimited breadsticks, but for a woman to admit to you that this is the nicest restaurant she's ever been to, what was the rest of the night like? Did she behave herself or what?
Yes, she behaved herself. She just was really blown away by it. Now, she ended up giving me some, but, you know. But she ended up not. Of course, it wasn't going to go anywhere. And at the time, I really didn't understand that it wasn't going to go anywhere.
Right.
But she did me a favor because she was like, "Listen, I can't deal with you. I'm not used to this," and I just couldn't wrap my head around. It's Olive Garden, you know. That's all I'm thinking in my head.
Sure.
This is not like some Ruth Chris or fancy restaurant where you got to get dressed up at. But. You know, but she ended up doing me a favor. But the thing coming back out into the market at that age, man, is the realization that that if what you want in quality, it's going to be hard pressed to find.
Yep.
And I know that there's issues across all spectrums of men.
Of course.
But things are usually five times worse within the black, you know, construct. So if most black men want a black woman.
Right.
One of the things that I had to unfortunately come to terms with, I don't know if I should say come to terms because I don't know if I should, if I really did, is if you are a black man and you want a black woman and that's your goal, you're going to have to swallow that you're going to be somebody's stepfather.
Mm.
You're going to have to swallow that. If you want a black woman, if you are over, I would say, 35 years old and you're now trying to think about settling down or getting a family, you are not going to have your own family if you want a black woman.
And
you're not.
Therein lies, and you know what, this is very interesting, TJ, therein lies the problem.
Yeah.
As, and the guy that runs the Manosphere Highlights Daily, he says it all the time. He's like, the only reason why I left America to find a wife, and the reason I wanted a wife is because I want kids. It doesn't make any sense it makes no sense for a man to get married if he does not want kids. That's just that's just how that goes. Now, you know, other situations like myself notwithstanding, I've never wanted kids. Even if I did, I couldn't have them with Devin. She's 46 years old. She's way past childbearing years. But one thing that I've always let people know is that when you're talking about issues like within the black community, it gets really, 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 really bad. And yes, there are issues in all other races, but issues in the black community, it's almost like they're magnified. Derek the Trader, TJ, sends a $5 super chat. It says, Donovan, do black men in America care less these days about being shamed by black women for dating outside their race? Very good question. What are your thoughts on that, TJ?
It's moving that way.
Okay.
It's moving that way. Let me tell you something. And I know this is going to be maybe a shock, maybe not to men. But what Kevin Samuels, what he said, how he was saying it, his standpoint, the only people that it was new to were women.
Yep. That's right.
And here's the other thing. Our black women don't believe that. Because in their world, they don't hear any guys talk about that. And that's why I bring back some accountability to us by being a bunch of cowards.
Right.
Is not having the ability to tell the women how you actually think and what you actually want. And here's the thing. Men place a lot of value on getting, how does MTR put it, the viscous innards?
The viscous innards, yes.
Men place a great deal of value on getting it.
Yes.
But guess who doesn't place any that much value on getting
the women.
It? The women. Don't let any dirty dick Dan Dillinger in them. They don't care.
Nope.
And so the reason why we place so much value in it is because it not a lot of us get it on a regular basis, and we gotta do so much to get it. So therefore, because it's a for us, it seems like a rare commodity, you know, so therefore we overinflate the value of it. So black men, yes, at one point, I would say through the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, you know, we would get shamed about dating out and dating out. But I would say the last 5 to 6 years, black men are just saying, you know what, we watched our fathers,
yep,
you know, get run through by women. We have been run through, you know, the mill about trying to, get in alignment with our women,
mm-hmm.
and they've just rejected it. And so men goes, I don't, you know, Kevin would say this all the time. Do you expect me to tell my guys to just not have a woman because
right.
you won't get right?
There you go.
He goes, I'm not going to tell them to do that. And I think that gave men the courage to go, you know what? He's absolutely right. Why do I gotta suffer because the woman that share my reflection don't want to get on the same page with me for whatever reason?
And that more or less, CJ, that is what gave rise to the Passport Bros.
All right. What do you think about that one? Okay. Let's go back to some more cases in point. And keep in mind, I'm still talking to the single brothers out there. All right, bro. Now, I'm hoping that I'm laying down some stuff for you to consider as a single man so that you can actually do something that would propel you into a different life. And the only thing that I could do personally speaking, is to tell you what I have actually experienced during my lifetime. And keep in mind that I done, the way I always put it, I done seen it all. From every angle that you could imagine, I've done seen it all. I done witnessed it, and I come to the conclusion that the best thing you could do is the first thing that I told you in the first place when I came on the air. Do you get your money, your bank, your horse, your carriage, your cattle? Just do you. You don't have to worry about her. He's going to be right there. There will be no escape. They are hunters. And don't ever think that you are doing something and you are not under surveillance by the opposite sex. No, you're not. I don't care if you go out of town. I don't care if you go out of the country. They still gonna be right there. You ain't gotta worry about that. Your job is supposed to be doing what you are supposed to do about you. If you busy doing that, then you gotta worry about all that. If you keep in mind that, you know, you can get rid of all the homeboys and the buddies and all that. Drop that. Get rid of that. You got all kind of stupid up in there. So you ain't got time for that. Let's deal with dating problems. Let's find out about that. Hold on.
Boom. Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Booyah. Now, this is E. Dean Cole, owner of E. Dean Cole Financial. This video will first be seen on the Patreon TV Uncut.
Uncut.
Yes, and we just finished doing a live feed on my Facebook, which Dean shared out. I got a lot of friend requests from that.
Yeah, we had over 1,000 people watching, 1,100 people watching.
Dean is the man in the office.
I'm the paper pusher.
The one when you're like, nah, I know LoShawn and Trucker Brown ain't come up with that. This is the guy. Because you're right, I didn't come up with it. Now, Dean, this is a question I wanted to ask you.
All right.
You're a successful guy.
Okay.
Okay, it's better than someone else saying you.
Yeah, okay.
You're a successful guy, CEO, you know, coupe bins, all that, jury, you know, random trips out of the country.
Yeah.
Private jets. What is it like dating as a successful, because even on, let's say we lean to the Afro-American side.
Yeah, because that's all I date.
Okay, Afro-American side.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like to be, that's basically to them cream of the crop, is it not?
Yeah.
Give us an insight on that. Is it easy?
It's not easy.
I don't know, because it seems easy.
Does it seem, I make it look easy?
From the outside looking
in. How do I make it look easy?
I mean, there's pictures of you on Instagram with 8 women at one time. Mm-hmm. Did you see that, Lo?
I did.
And you, I seen a picture of you were with 8 women.
Mm-hmm.
Lightly clothed. I don't know if you're on a beach or where you were at one time.
We was in the Bahamas.
You was in the Bahamas.
I thought you were talking about when we was in my suite. Did the video when we was in my suite.
Okay, that's a whole different thing. So to me, from outside looking in, if you're a white collar,
mm-hmm.
successful man, dating is easy for you, from my understanding. That's how it works.
It's not. It's hard. You guys have seen me publicly try to date somebody.
Yeah.
And it was a huge debacle.
Sure.
She tried to steal my clients. She wanted. And we were talking about this a little bit too, like, I would respect a chick if she was like, hey, I think you're sexy. Hey, here go a coochie shot. Hey, here go some breasts or whatever. I'm interested in you. That direct approach, I would respect her more versus the, hey, I want to pick your brain, or hey, I want to run something by you, or hey, let's take a business trip someplace and whatever, and you get there and she trying to talk to you. That bothers me. Like that literally bothers me.
So when the women come at you, do you think you attract more successful women that have agendas, or more women that are not successful that's just trying to talk to you?
To be honest with you, women all the time tell me that I'm intimidating. That's why I talk. Even though it seems like I get a lot of attention from women,
it does look that way.
It seems that way, but it doesn't. The follow up ain't there. It's like they'll come and look like, ooh, ah, there's no follow up. There's no, and see, this thing about it too. Like I can't just like dive in somebody's DMs because I feel like I don't want to be KT'd. Who gonna KT me?
Inside with Joe. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be KT'd. You know what I'm saying?
So because of that, it's difficult, man. Like I use services. Like I use like high-end dating services. Like I use high-end dating services.
I heard that a lot of really successful women or men end up finding it that they have to use those.
Yeah, I use like high-end dating services.
What do they provide?
They screen the chicks. I went out with a chick that was 21 a couple weeks ago, and she works for like some of the top surgeons in Atlanta. So they screen them. She just
20-year-old just didn't have a head space.
Exactly.
You weren't feeling it.
She was fine though, but I couldn't connect with her. And another thing too is like I'm somewhat of a sapiosexual. Meaning that, yeah, you can be fine. And also, my heart has been broken. Like, I'm divorced. So that's why it's hard. It makes it even harder for me because I ain't going to fall for the okie-doke. Ain't no falling for no okie-doke with me. I done been ran through the mud. Like, when I was at the top of my career, I was married. Making as much money as I ever made. My wife at the time, ex-wife, did not have to work. She wanted to work. I had to tell her, sit down with our daughter. You ain't got to work.
Mm-hmm.
But she was, I want to hear me roar type of woman.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to work or whatever. But when I went through my divorce, I lost everything. I had a 7-bedroom house, movie theater in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so depressed. I owned a mortgage company at the time. I lost all of it because I couldn't work. I lost
so
all
dating
of it.
For you, does it feel like business in the beginning? Is it like you're a lawyer and you're setting up your liability blocks from the beginning? Like, I'm going to block myself from this and that.
Yeah. Because it's like this. It's like, you want that low-hanging fruit. You want Shaquita with the fat booty.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You want somebody that's just going, like, you want Shaquita with the fat booty because she's fun. But at the same time, she has a huge liability.
So now you almost need to date someone who's successful in their own.
Or somebody who wants to be kept.
So now, hold on, that don't make sense.
Like sugar babies. That's why you see a lot of older successful men with sugar babies.
You gotta explain that dynamic.
So what a sugar baby is somebody that is a, like I have two homeboys,
mm-hmm.
and one is about to get married to his sugar baby. One of them went through India. They went through all of India, and he helped her start an online yoga company. And now she's knocking down six figures because of him. And they're massively in love now. A sugar baby most of the time is a younger girl who is open-minded, who wants to learn, who likes older men, but the man gives them a certain lifestyle. I ain't paying it like that. You know what I'm saying? I hadn't connected in my mind. So I'm still trying to figure out dealing with somebody who's somewhat on my level. Like the young lady that I was telling you about, she does the exact same thing I do, but for government and grants, who I'm going to go see tomorrow.
So you saying you ain't feeling the sugar baby thing. You rather just deal with somebody who's better on your level.
Who's on my level.
Because that sugar baby thing looks like you want to have the advantage.
Yeah, it's like that. And another thing about I'm too fly to have a sugar baby. I'm still somewhat young and fly. Like, you have these older, wrinkly guys. Like, my homeboy who happened to get a sugar baby, he is a day trader, and all he does is trade stocks. And he is weird. He's a weirdo. He's a nerd. So he's socially inept. He can't really...
He ain't walking in with his swag to pull nobody.
Yeah, exactly. So it's for him, even though he's a younger guy, he's Caucasian, he's fit. He needed to go and get a sugar baby like that. You see what I'm saying?
And you feel like I could pull one.
Yeah.
Do you think I walk in, snatch y'all the wow?
Okay. That makes sense. Because the more successful I get, the more money I get,
The more trouble,
the more people know who I am.
You are massively successful. Dude, you are a celebrity. Loshun, how many times have we gone places and there's a line wrapped around the corner to talk to TV?
Okay, I'll give you that. I'll say I'm popular.
You're a celebrity, dude.
So let's say if I was to start dating.
Yes.
Right? How would I determine who likes me because I'm popular?
Yes.
And who just likes me because I'm cool?
It's hard, dude. It's hard. You gotta vet them out, man. This is one thing I discovered. Eventually, the real them gonna show up, and you just have to. You can't deal them too much. And this is the thing: don't be public with them. Like, people say they see me, like, people don't really know who I date. They might see me. I have friends, and I have friends.
Would you ever be putting that business on social media?
Yeah, because I'm that type of person. When I know it's solid, when it's rock solid, like, you don't see nothing now because I had to take it all off. But yeah, because that's like, and also, this is the thing too. The reason why Shaquita with the fat booty is fun, but she's a liability, is because you're judged in corporate America, in the business world. You're judged by your mate.
So that'd be more beneficial just not to have one until you have the right one.
But no, there's certain realms you can't go into
without
one.
Really?
It's a double-edged sword. You can't be the president of the United States and you're single. It's hard for you to be a senator, hard for you to be a mayor, hard for you to be a council person. Council person gets paid $35,000, $40,000 a year, but they're a public figure.
Mm-hmm.
You got they go through a vetting process for your mate. Certain CEOs, certain positions you have.
So you ain't going to be the top dog at Merrill Lynch without a wife.
You're not going to be the top dog at Merrill Lynch without a wife.
I did not know that.
Yep. You will not walk into, like, if you build it from the ground up like me, but if you walk into a position and they vet you as a CEO and you go through a headhunter process,
so
you're a liability.
It will somewhat,
they look at you as a liability.
It would somewhat benefit me in business. You were talking about sponsorships, companies looking at me if I had a wife.
Yep.
And you think that would help me?
Yeah, I know it would. Wholesome. Because in their minds, success, prime example. When you said you saw me with 8 women, and you said your wife said she saw me with 8 women, first thing came to mind.
You're a whore.
First thing came to mind. But it's not the case. The perception is of that. But the reality is, I went back to my suite by myself.
But you see, in my mind, I thought you had a freaking...
Orgy.
Yeah. I thought Dean was here on
the True Blood. Not that night.
Mm-hmm.
But that night I didn't. But
you said it's perception.
It's a perception. And unfortunately, perception is reality. Like, most times people say you're guilty until proven innocent. No, you're not. Not in the court of public opinion. In the court of law, you might be. But in the court of public opinion, you are guilty until
proven
innocent.
And then we still kind of think you did.
And the stink is still on you. So that plays its part. Also, when it comes to business, like, certain married men don't like their women to enroll into my course, don't want me to do business with them.
Because they don't see you with a wife.
Exactly. And they're like, oh, you're going to try to take my woman. Or they are intimidated because of the quote-unquote success. You know, then they're like, oh, well, it's easy for him to...
Yeah. Oh, marriage affects your money.
Marriage affects your money, man.
Now, yeah. It's good until you split.
Yeah, it's good until you split.
Then when
you
get it's all bad.
Or you get that prenup. You get a prenup, and you ain't got to worry about it.
But, I mean, it still affects your business in some way.
It affects your business.
Because depending on how you split will affect other people.
Yep. It will. Like child support or...
Or what they think you did to have split.
Yes. And they always want to blame the guy.
Yeah.
That has the place. And so, I mean, dating as a successful man is kind of difficult because then you have to deal with these women that I want to hear me roar type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to compete in my relationship. I ain't doing that. There was this one chick, she had a master's, and every single time we had a conversation, it seemed like I was playing mental chess with her. I'm like, baby, I just want to sit on the couch, fill on your booty, and watch Netflix. Can we just do that? Like, can we just...
You over here talking about Herodotus.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? You're talking about, what's the thing? I can't even pronounce it. It's called the, what is it called? The personality test, the... Oh, what is it called?
Well, if you're A or B or A.
Yes, what is it called? The Briggs, Max Briggs, something like that.
Yeah, some philosophy.
Something crazy like that. I don't want to sit on the couch, rub on your booty, and let's just watch Netflix. You know what I'm saying? Like, can we just chill out?
Yeah, I'm not at the office.
I'm not at the office. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to try to figure out the quantum physics of the hurricane.
That makes sense. But
so it's difficult. And then also sometimes it's and also because I am an alpha male, I have no problem with my woman being a boss chick. She can run everybody but me. You can run everybody but me. You can have everybody bowing down to you because you're a queen, because I'm a king. But you ain't going to run me. And so the problem is they're used to that. And then you have to go through that power struggle. Like I had, like the situation I told you about not too long ago. Power struggle.
Houston.
Not Houston.
Florida.
Yes.
True. But see, this is my thing. So do you feel, and I've always wondered this about the regime, okay?
Okay.
Well, from the outside
from
looking
in. Because my new nickname is the Robin Hood of the regime.
Yeah.
I'm the Robin Hood, the regime, Robin Hood of the regime.
If you are experienced with the regime, do you think people are having business arrangement marriages?
Yes, absolutely. Positively. Yes. Because of people who get, oh, we absolutely.
So
and that's why they have side chicks, and they okay with that. Like the Italians call them gumas. Like the concubine. The Nostronosco or the Italians or they're the most like corporate America. When you talk about gangs and you're talking about like consiglieri.
Mm-hmm.
The consiglieri is just like a vice president. And then you have the mob bosses. You have
underboss
and capos and all this stuff. It's run just like a corporation. And if you look at that, it's very much so. Yeah, you have people that come together just because of people's, just for that whole purpose.
So what would be the dynamics of that? The dynamics would be more...
I give you what you want. You come to this event with me.
Mm-hmm.
You be seen with me. We might have sex. We might not. You might sleep with your side dude. I might sleep with my side chick, or vice versa. Or we definitely going to swing with the president of Johnson & Johnson and their wives, or the president of Vape Incorporated and their wives, or whomever. This is fictitious.
Yeah.
These are hypotheticals.
Don't go looking up these
people. So don't be going looking for it. I'm just saying.
It's all you think.
Allegedly. Let's do that way. Say allegedly.
So you think, wow.
Dude, hedonism? Dude, listen. Okay, so... All right, so being in the regime, I get invited to events. I got invited to a CEO event in London. I will show you the invitation, a swingers party in London for CEOs.
What?
Yep, I got
that
invited. That
thing crap off of a
movie.
Off of TV.
Imitation, art imitates life.
And these people in here just buck wild.
Well, it's not like that. It's not like buck wild, but...
It's understood that if you get the wings.
You walk through the door, you know what it is. And then you have different doors that do different things. And all yes, that's real. That's real life. Like I don't know, like if you go to my YouTube channel, you'll see a video of me with the private jet.
Mm-hmm.
I got invited to that just because I'm a CEO. So I think K-Michelle, who was there? Christina Milian was there, and somebody else was there. And it was like maybe 40, 50 people. I got invited to one with in Atlanta, Georgia, but I just did not go. It was a back room restaurant with Wendy Williams. So when you are a CEO and you're put in certain databases, you get invited to stuff like that all the time.
And that is the thing they call the Illuminati.
That's what they say.
Yeah, that's a name that people don't know what they're talking about, call it, but it's an inner circle.
There was a business brunch with Damon John from Shark Tank. I got invited to.
You didn't go to
that. I didn't go to that. That was in New York. I didn't go to that.
See, some of these, you know, this is too risky for me.
Or I just got other stuff that I got going on.
That blows my mind. And, that further fosters my hatred for the regime. It does, because let's say if I have a business plan, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and they look down on you because you're not married.
I didn't go to college. I didn't go through none of the social upper markers.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting there off merit.
Yep, off of sheer work ethic.
Yeah, sheer work ethic.
Like me, like that's like I don't, like people assume. Like, I'm gonna tell you, my saving grace was the fact that I got put in the for the lack of better words regime at the age of 18, because I went through their training programs and I have like I was talking about on Facebook. I got my NMLS ID. I got fingerprinted with the FBI and all the other stuff at a young age to be in banking and finance. If it had not been for that, I'd be messed up. I'd be effed out the game.
Because you just wouldn't have been in the circle.
Because I just wouldn't have been in the circle. Because I don't have a college degree.
So when I get up to
that. I
have
a gang of certifications, but I don't have a college
degree. I get up to that height, I won't fit in.
You could. You would. You could.
I don't know.
But this is the thing about it. This is, and I'm going to be real transparent. Y'all know how I get. Oh, my God. I'm about to be real. Y'all know how I get. So most of the Caucasians will look at you like the token black guy, or they know, they're like the people that say, oh, I have a black friend. They will run and you will be that one black friend. They'll keep you around and the aura or the energy will be, you don't really belong here, so you need to be grateful that I'm your friend.
You felt that?
Yes. Yes, that's why I'm so unapologetically woke, because I let them know, I don't need you for me. Like, for instance, remember I did the whole thing about the screenshot. Mm-hmm. A young lady who came into my inbox. That was from one of those services, one of those higher-end services. Somebody was like, I thought you were a CEO. And underneath that, I said, I am a CEO. Who's going to fire me? That's why I woke, and that's why I build my business the way that I build the business is for that very reason. Oh, yes, people will try to rank on you in a heartbeat. They will try to call favors because they feel like, I brought you to this luncheon. I introduced you to this person. Mm-hmm. But then there are also a general, like I mentioned the person's name on the live feed, Grant Cardone.
Mm-hmm.
Grant Cardone is like you and I. Comes from nothing. He built his empire through real estate. Anybody can flip real estate. And he just was extremely very good at it. And, I mean, you really would like Grant Cardone. He's like, he'll cuss you out. Like, he was one of the ones that gave me the courage to write my first book. Because I'll show it to you. He was doing a motivational speech or talk, and somebody was like, your book is trash. It's full of all these misspelled words. And this is Grant's words, not mine. He said, you mean the bestseller, bitch? And he said it just like that in the stage in front of, and the crowd just erupted.
Wow.
Yes. And he was like, he said, you mean the one that's a bestseller? And then he was like, yeah, it's full of misspelled words. He says, okay, but it's still a bestseller, bitch. And he used that, and the crowd erupted. Grant Cardone in a room full of
Ivy Leaguers.
I'll show it to you when we're done. See,
my thing is this. Let's say you take me to one of these luncheons, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get spiffy because I clean up.
You clean up extremely well.
Yeah,
you know,
I clean up good. So you take me here, and if they start talking about the blue collar and what we think we're going to do with Luke, if autonomousness pops up at all, I'm blackout. I'm going to let you know right now, I'm going to start reading people and telling them they're regimists, and it's going to be, that's why I don't like to be around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say I prefer to be with the lower class. I prefer to be around blue-collar, hard-working, flannel-wearing, bad teeth people.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Croc. rocking. It's all of that. I prefer to be around construction workers and stuff like that because they may be crass and say a lot of messed up stuff, but they be honest.
They're genuine. Yeah.
I don't think I could read the dishonesty.
It's hard to.
Of something like it. Because when you work with the skin of your brow, you work with the sweat of your brow, I don't need to finagle around you. As hard as I work, that's why I like trucking. As hard as I work, it's as big as the check.
At the end of the day, it is what it is.
Exactly.
You ain't got to quote-unquote suck anybody's D or kiss anybody's A or know this person's last name or have this person's last name look similar to your last name. You don't need any of that. Hold on for a second.
All right, we're back, everybody. Let's roll. in my personal opinion, I don't agree with everything that was said. However, I am glad it was said, and I thought it was worthy enough to put it out here and let you listen to it. However, going back to what I had told you in the beginning, a man takes care of himself first. Make sure he got everything that he needs for his own self up front before he even think about dealing with anything else. Because if you ain't got nothing, you can't do nothing. Okay? So these are just the basics of what I'm trying to get across to the brothers today. Just talk to the brothers now. We ain't talking to the brothers and the sisters. I'm just talking to the brothers, the single men out there who are trying to do some things and make some things happen in their life. I was living in a place one time, and I used to get out there and I play my music and just relaxing and chilling and hang up another brother. He come out there, he sit down, and we sit down and listen to old school music and stuff. He said, "You know what, man?" He said, "The songs that you play today," he said, "I ain't heard them since back in the day when I was a young man growing up." I said, "Okay, well, I'm glad you, if you enjoyed it, if you did, I'm glad you did because that's all I listen to. I want to hear no junk. I want to hear some real stuff that means some real things." You know what the man told me? He said, "I'm going to tell you something. Before I came out here and sit out here and listen to you playing the music that you listen to," he said, "I was finna, before I came out here, I was finna blow my own brains out." I said, "No, man." He said, "Yeah, because I feel like I ain't got no hope. I ain't done nothing. I ain't got nothing. I can't get nothing." But after listening to the music that you played today, he said, I have a different perspective. I think I'm going to do something different." I said, "All right." I said, "Well, for all it's worth, thank you. And I hope it help you, and I hope you think about certain things different." Now, telling you that story, what I want you to think about is this. I was in that particular spot at that particular time, and in my personal opinion, at a critical point in history. And so you have every reason in the world to take care of yourself and do right by yourself and then move forward so you can do something and assist somebody else. I just thought I'd put that out there for you, let you know what I ran into, because as far as I'm concerned, this was magnificent. I never heard anything like it in my life. But that is what the man told me. Let's deal with some experiences.
Okay, guys, I'm finally making this video for you all because I know I've been promising this video for y'all. Today, I am going to be talking about my experience and journey in corporate America as a black male. I've had ups, I've had downs, I've witnessed bias, I've witnessed discrimination. So yeah, happy to share my experience with y'all and share this story. First, I want to say this. I enjoy, you know, working in corporate America. I've enjoyed my experience and my journey to get to where I am now in my life. Everything that I talk about today, you know, has propelled me and elevated me in a way that words can't even describe, because these experiences taught me about people. It taught me, you know, how to move, how to maneuver. And some of these things that I say today, it's going to be like, well, dang. That's wild. But, you know, at the same time, everything that you go through in life, you will learn a lesson from it. So, you know, I've learned lessons. I kind of know how to maneuver now. Like, I just know. I figured I can't start this video without saying, like, how I even got started, right? And I hope some of y'all watch my pay transparency story journey video, and that's how this video even started. So as some of you all know, I started off in the hotel industry. Honestly, I graduated from the University of South Carolina with a management degree focused in hospitality management, and wanted to get into hotel management, resort management, be a GM, open up my own hotel. That ended up pivoting, but my experience in the hotel industry, it wasn't bad at all. I just hated dealing with customers. Like, customer and guest is a pain. And also the money wasn't the way it needed to be for all the stuff you had to do to move up. But that's for another thing. I ended up pivoting to getting into higher education. So higher education, if y'all don't know, that's when you work for a university, in the school system, college system, things like that. So I ended up going back to University of South Carolina. And there I was a admissions counselor / recruiter for 2 years. And then I spent a year as a multicultural coordinator, assisting with some of our multicultural programs. I stayed there for like 2.5-3 years. I enjoyed it there. My experience there was great. It was a wonderful atmosphere. Coworkers was great. Never experienced any bias, never experienced like any discrimination. Everybody was happy to be there. The campus was beautiful. Students was great. Like, it was a great job. The only problem was the pay. The pay sucked. And y'all have to go back and watch the video to understand, you know, why. Where I was in my life, I needed to make more, you know what I'm saying? I needed to provide more. So that's why I had to leave that job. So when I left that job, I ended up applying to a bunch of jobs, y'all. I applied to job after job. I had interviews with NASCAR. I had interviews with Airbnb, Twitter, a whole bunch of companies. Anyway, I ended up landing my first corporate job as a contractor. So I ended up applying for a recruiter job at Deloitte. They contacted me. They was like, yo, you know, we're giving this recruiter role to someone else, but would you be open to a recruiting coordinator role? I was like, recruiting coordinator role. Mind you, I didn't know much about it. I was like, cool. And then they was like, the only caveat is I know that you applied in Charlotte, but we would need you to move to Atlanta for this particular role. I was like, all right, cool. I got family there. I'll move to Atlanta for a contract role. Figure the rest out. So a recruiting coordinator is basically you help out recruiters with scheduling, office visits, things like that. So you're not out there doing the recruitment, but it's a good stepping stone to becoming a recruiter. My contract was technically for 6 months.
So I started the role, moved down to Atlanta, went into the office. First person I saw was a black young lady. Crystal, if you're watching this, I appreciate you. The only black person that was technically on the team that I was on, she welcomed me with open arms. She was the first person I seen when I walked in the building. You know, I'm dressed in, you know, the Deloitte attire. If y'all know Deloitte, you know, you got some khakis on, you got the button down on, you know, you got a little brief thing, you know. So I was ready. Crystal was very cool, you know what I'm saying? I'm still cool with Crystal to this day. One of my best friends that is a woman for short. Me and Crystal, we was like this, you know what I'm saying? Y'all know when you got that one friend in the office, y'all be here. But anyway, we was on a team and she was a coordinator and I was a coordinator. I was a coordinator for a couple of recruiters. She was a coordinator for a couple of recruiters. Both Crystal and I had the same manager since we both were coordinators. So this is where I got my first taste of being like a black male in corporate America. And it didn't help that I was the only black male on the coordinator team in like the Southeast, maybe. It was like maybe one or two of us, man. My first issue came when me and my manager, we would be talking and things like that. And I thought she trusted me, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't do anything for her not to trust me or anything like that. Somehow she told Crystal, like, "Yo, I don't think Corey is happy in his role, this and that, this and that. Can you talk to him and see?" So Crystal told me, she was like, "Yeah, like, such and such said that she feel like you're not happy on the team and you don't want to be here." And a lot of, I was like, what? I ain't even do nothing. I'm still trying to learn the role. I don't know what's going on. So that was the first thing. I was like, that's weird. I never experienced like another person going to another person directly about me without coming to me. And I remember Crystal saying, yeah, she said she feel like she can't gauge you or she can't really understand, not even understand. I think the word she used, like, she can't read you or she can't gauge you. And I was like, what? Why she just didn't ask me or come to me in one of our one-on-ones and say, hey, y'all, like. So the second thing that happened on this team was one of the recruiters that I was assigned to as far as like being a coordinator for, she started treating me like I was just a little go-boy. Like, that's it. Like, I remember, I'll never forget this, and I was pissed. I was working like maybe late. It was like 6 o'clock. I was working late, working on some scheduling, some interviews. And she emailed me and she was like, hey, can you get this pizza order out for me? And in the email, she had every detail, where the pizza needed to go, what the actual pizzas was, how many pizzas, what the toppings were. She was actually on campus recruitment and needed these pizzas to come. Mind you, I'm doing work. So I saw the email. I was like, what? The amount of time that it just could have took her to pick up the phone and order those pizzas, she went and made the email to send to me so I could then order these pizzas for her. It was the weirdest thing ever. So then I was like, this is so weird between my manager and then her. It was just wild to me because I never experienced anything like that. This is probably like month 4 within the contract. Remember, I have 6 months in. I was like, they probably are not going to renew my contract, even if they could, because I just have this bad vibe. You know what I'm saying? So then I started interviewing with other companies. Crystal hooked me up with one of her people that they was looking for a role at a center. Ended up applying to that role to be a campus recruiter for the AUC. And then that's when I started my next role. So I ended up leaving Deloitte before my contract was even over. Deuces, I'm out, and went over to Accenture. When I got my job at Accenture, I was happy. I was happy to leave Deloitte. I was happy to get up off that team because what I was experiencing, it was just, as y'all can see, it was just rough to be in that type of atmosphere, in that environment. So when I got to Accenture, everything was good. I had to recruit for the AUC, which is its own team. So Morehouse, Spelman, and Clark Atlanta had to recruit at those schools, be on campus, host events, hire, everything like that. And then I also had Georgia State, which was rolling out, and then I was taking on Kennesaw State. And then on my team, I had maybe 3 other recruiters with me, and we had some recruiting coordinators that used to help out. And due to my experience at Deloitte, I knew how to treat recruiting coordinators with respect. Don't just treat them as go boys and just to be saying, hey, do this for me, do this for me. So I kind of knew how to treat coordinators and they respected that. And also all the recruiters on this team was cool too. Everybody was cool. It was a great time. It was me and this other girl that started, Nicole, if you're watching, shout out to you, Nicole. She started the same time. We was like, boom. And then the other recruiter, she was on a team probably 3-4 years before me and then some other recruiters, but everybody was cool. My manager ended up getting a job and leaving. And then that's when everything went. Everything went downhill. So one of the recruiters that was working there before me ended up moving into that manager role. Now, I was on campus all the time. I was, you know, at Morehouse, Clark Atlanta, Spelman, on campus, hosting events, doing things the way they need to be done. You know what I'm saying? Campus team, making a relationship with the campus team. You know, I was new, so I was still learning. I was still making mistakes. I was still, you know, learning along the way.
Okay. All right. Let's take a look at the 48 laws of power.
Law 1. Never outshine the master. Always make those above you feel comfortably superior. In your desire to please and impress them, do not go too far in displaying your talents, or you might accomplish the opposite, inspire fear and insecurity. Make your masters appear more brilliant than they are, and you will attain the heights of power. Law 2. Never put too much trust in friends. Learn how to use enemies. Be wary of friends. They will betray you more quickly, for they are easily aroused to envy. They also become spoiled and tyrannical. But hire a former enemy, and he will be more loyal than a friend, because he has more to prove. In fact, you have more to fear from friends than from enemies. If you have no enemies, find a way to make them. Law 3. Conceal your intentions. Keep people off balance and in the dark by never revealing the purpose behind your actions. If they have no clue what you are up to, they cannot prepare a defense. Guide them far enough down the wrong path. Envelop them in enough smoke, and by the time they realize your intentions, it will be too late. Law 4. Always say less than necessary. When you are trying to impress people with words, the more you say, the more common you appear, and the less in control. Even if you're saying something banal, it will seem original if you make it vague, open-ended, and sphinx-like. Powerful people impress and intimidate by saying less. The more you say, the more likely you are to say something foolish. Law 5. So much depends on reputation. Guard it with your life. Reputation is the cornerstone of power. Through reputation alone, you can intimidate and win. Once it slips, however, you are vulnerable and will be attacked on all sides. Make your reputation unassailable. Always be alert to potential attacks and thwart them before they happen. Meanwhile, learn to destroy your enemies by opening holes in their own reputations. Then, stand aside and let public opinion hang them. Law 6. Court attention at all cost. Everything is judged by its appearance. What is unseen counts for nothing. Never let yourself get lost in the crowd then, or buried in oblivion. Stand out. Be conspicuous at all cost. Make yourself a magnet of attention by appearing larger, more colorful, more mysterious than the bland and timid masses. Law 7. Get others to do the work for you but always take the credit. Use the wisdom, knowledge, and legwork of other people to further your own cause. Not only will such assistance save you valuable time and energy, it will give you a godlike aura of efficiency and speed. In the end, your helpers will be forgotten and you will be remembered. Never do yourself what others can do for you. Law 8. Make other people come to you. Use bait if necessary. When you force the other person to act, you are the one in control. It is always better to make your opponent come to you, abandoning his own plans in the process. Lure him with fabulous gains, then attack. You hold the cards. Law 9. Win through your actions, never through argument. Any momentary triumph you think you have gained through argument is really a Pyrrhic victory. The resentment and ill will you stir up is stronger and lasts longer than any momentary change of opinion. It is much more powerful to get others to agree with you through your actions without saying a word. Demonstrate, do not explicate. Law 10. Infection. Avoid the unhappy and unlucky. You can die from someone else's misery. Emotional states are as infectious as diseases. You may feel you are helping the drowning man, but you are only precipitating your own disaster. The unfortunate sometimes draw misfortune on themselves. They will also draw it on you. Associate with the happy and fortunate instead. Law 11. Learn to keep people dependent on you. To maintain your independence, you must always be needed and wanted. The more you are relied on, the more freedom you have. Make people depend on you for their happiness and prosperity, and you have nothing to fear. Never teach them enough so that they can do without you. Law 12. Use selective honesty and generosity to disarm your victim. One sincere and honest move will cover over dozens of dishonest ones. Open-hearted gestures of honesty and generosity bring down the guard of even the most suspicious people. Once your selective honesty opens a hole in their armor, you can deceive and manipulate them at will. A timely gift. A Trojan horse will serve the same purpose. Law 13. When asking for help, appeal to people's self-interest, never to their mercy or gratitude. If you need to turn to an ally for help, do not bother to remind him of your past assistance and good deeds. He will find a way to ignore you. Instead, uncover something in your request or in your alliance with him that will benefit him and emphasize it out of all proportion. He will respond enthusiastically when he sees something to be gained for himself. Law 14. Pose as a friend, work as a spy. Knowing about your rival is critical. Use spies to gather valuable information that will keep you a step ahead. Better still, play the spy yourself. In polite social encounters, learn to probe. Ask indirect questions to get people to reveal their weaknesses and intentions. There is no occasion that is not an opportunity for artful spying. Law 15. Crush your enemy totally. All great leaders since Moses have known that a feared enemy must be crushed completely. Sometimes they have learned this the hard way. If one ember is left alight, no matter how dimly it smolders, a fire will eventually break out. More is lost through stopping halfway than through total annihilation. The enemy will recover and will seek revenge. Crush him, not only in body, but in spirit. Law 16. Use absence to increase respect and honor. Too much circulation makes the price go down. The more you are seen and heard from, the more common you appear. If you are already established in a group, temporary withdrawal from it will make you more talked about, even more admired. You must learn when to leave. Create value through scarcity. Law 17. Keep others in suspense. Cultivate an air of unpredictability. Humans are creatures of habit, with an insatiable need to see familiarity in other people's actions. Your predictability gives them a sense of control. Turn the tables. Be deliberately unpredictable. Behavior that seems to have no consistency or purpose will keep them off balance, and they will wear themselves out trying to explain your moves. Taken to an extreme, this strategy can intimidate and terrorize. Law 18. Do not build fortresses to protect yourself. Isolation is dangerous. The world is dangerous and enemies are everywhere. Everyone has to protect themselves. A fortress seems the safest, but isolation exposes you to more dangers than it protects you from. It cuts you off from valuable information. It makes you conspicuous and an easy target. Better to circulate among people, find allies, mingle. You are shielded from your enemies by the crowd. Law 19. Know who you are dealing with. Do not offend the wrong person. There are many different kinds of people in the world, and you can never assume that everyone will react to your strategies in the same way. Deceive or outmaneuver some people, and they will spend the rest of their lives seeking revenge. They are wolves in lamb's clothing. Choose your victims and opponents carefully, then. Never offend or deceive the wrong person. Law 20.
All right. We got a roll now. You can go right there on YouTube and type in the 48 Laws of Power. I do not have enough time on this network to give you all 48 of them, but I will tell you this. You can go right there on YouTube and just type in the 48 Laws of Power, and you can take your time and listen to the entire thing from start to finish, because I got to go out here and find out what's going on with the brothers out here in L.A. Y'all
I happened to be online the other day when I came across an older article talking about the worst places for black women to date and find a good black man. Now, it's interesting when you're young as a black man and you're coming up as a teenager, everywhere is hard to date. When you get older, get a little bit of money, get a little bit more security, the tables turn. The reverse is true for black women. When they are younger, it is much easier. As they go to different cities, it becomes more difficult. And it's crazy because almost every lady that I talk to or I know believe that their city is actually the worst for dating. It depends on where you're at. This lady, who was very, very beautiful, was living and working in Washington, D.C., but she decided to do this to find love.
Relocating for love, is that desperate or is that a practical investment?
Investment.
Why do you think so?
I'm sorry to say it, but sometimes I feel like a lot of our title or status of being unmarried has to do with our location. Your chances are lower in a lot of these metropolitan cities. Although there's a lot more people, a lot of the times they're more career focused than they are family focused.
Because you were in D.C. for a little while.
Correct.
Yeah. I heard you talking about how you felt like the D.C. was just a swamp for dating.
Correct.
And you also likened it to Atlanta when it comes to dating.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I knew in my spirit my husband was not there. I could tell, not only through my own experiences, but through the experiences of the women that I know that live in Washington, D.C. Mm. A lot of them are unmarried. I feel like a lot of men, they love D.C. because they know that.
Good pickings for them.
Oh, it is great picking.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Atlanta is the same.
Oh,
way.
Atlanta is the same exact way. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so interesting that you said, not only for your own experiences, but look around, look at your friends.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes sense to me.
Right.
Because at some point, it's not about you, it's about your environment. Because your environment does impact a lot of your day-to-day life. And why wouldn't it impact your dating life? Definitely.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's interesting. This woman who is very gorgeous moved out of D.C., and I'm assuming that she got married somewhere else. But she did mention another city, Atlanta. Now, Atlanta has a lot of opportunities, a lot of employment, a lot of people, a lot of transient people who, you know, move from different places like St. Louis or Dallas or even California to the Atlanta area. And well, while there's a lot of black people and a lot of professional people, people believe that, well, Atlanta's not that great.
Let me jump right into this. Dating in Atlanta is garbage. If you come in here to date, go to another state. I would definitely say some hot states right now to go to is Texas, like Houston, Dallas, North Carolina, Charlotte. Those type places that I would say they would be more prone to probably like more dating. You know what I'm saying? Those are like some of the hot states now that, you know, that people are going to see hot states and cities, you know.
Now let's fly all the way to California, your boy O'Shea Duke Jackson's home state. I was born in Los Angeles County, raised partly in L.A. The majority of my life I spent as an adult in Sacramento, California. Now, Sacramento, California was a city a lot different from, like, let's say, Oakland or even L.A. I mean, the reason is because Sacramento was, you know, very diverse. L.A. is very diverse, but Sacramento is very diverse. It's probably like a rainbow city. It was a lot of interracial dating when I was coming up in the 90s, and it was even crazier back then. In Los Angeles, which does have its own black population, pretty big. You know, you have certain communities like Baldwin Hills and Lemur Park and, you know, Compton, and used to be Compton and places like that, Inglewood. But now you have black women who are saying things like this.
So I need to talk to y'all about something. I recently went to an event and there were about 1,000 people there. And of the couples that were there, about 95% of them were black men with non-black women. The person leading the event was a black man that was married to a white woman. I'd be lying if I said that seeing all of this at the same time was not triggering. This is pretty much what the dating scene looks like overall in LA. Here are four other observations that I picked up on since moving to LA. One, it's not equal. It's not like I'm seeing a bunch of black women dating outside their race. In fact, I'm barely seeing black women dating at all. Two, it's gotten so bad that at this point, whenever I do see a black man that's single, the first thing that I'm asking myself is, I wonder if he dates black women. Three, within the past couple months, I've had conversations with multiple black women that actually want to leave LA. Not because of the economy, not because they aren't flourishing in their careers, but simply because they feel like there's no love for them in LA. The fact that I know so many beautiful, talented, compassionate, evolved black women that are all feeling the same way makes no sense to me. And lastly, when you don't see yourself reflected in a space, you feel like you don't exist. As a black woman myself, I can tell you honestly, when it comes to the romantic space, I have never felt more invisible than I do living in LA.
Now, this is a very beautiful black woman, and she's complaining about not being able to find a black man. This lady is absolutely gorgeous, but it gets worse. You have other women who are just berating black men because, well, they can't find one.
This is the one right here, and I'm going to tread lightly because I know people be in their feelings when it comes to race and all of that. But when it comes
to... All right, y'all. We're down to the last 4 minutes. Single man in his health. First of all, you know doggone well, if you ain't growing the food, you don't know what's in it. If somebody is getting it to you. When you go in a restaurant, if you don't see the people actually fixing the food to bring out and give it to you, you don't know what in the hell went on back then. But if you are looking at it while they're fixing it, put it on a plate and give it to you, your chances are better. But you even get better than that when you start growing your own food and eating your own food. you could contribute better to your health. That's my take on that right there. Based on what I have already went through in my life. You walk in a restaurant, you sit down, the waiter comes and give you a menu. You pick out what you mean, you want on the menu, then she take it and give it to somebody that's behind a wall that's going to prepare something for you to ingest. And you don't know what you are ingesting. But nevertheless, I just want to put that out there. That just think about it for a minute. But anyway, it's time for me to shut down. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana Elbe, and y'all have a good evening, okay?
Hey, I'm a long way from my lady, but I can always feel her presence. I don't care how far I go away. Now, I got a letter today. And it made me feel so good when I read what the letter had to say. I'm gonna take the tension off you, baby, 'cause I'm on my way. Hey, baby. Honey, I'm on the way. It ain't gonna take long. Can you hold yourself together and remember that I'm your girl? And when we make love tonight, we won't be dreaming. Girl, we'll be together. We're gonna make love all night until the morning light. We can do no wrong, baby, 'cause I'm home tonight. Where your man is home. Oh, girl, your man is home. Everything.